Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Happy Memorial Day to all of y'all out there across Acadiana. This is Raymond Parch III, and you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We got a jam-packed special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company coming up. We got not one, not two, not three, not four, not five. Oh, we went LeBron James. Six guests are lined up for today's show. But the news of the day, and what we have to lead off with, is LSU baseball. Remember a few weeks ago when the sky was falling? And I told everyone, stop. Sky's not falling. Stop being Chicken Little. Yes, you suffered a loss at home to Ole Miss for the first time since Ronald Reagan was president, first term. Yes, you got embarrassed by Louisiana Tech in a midweek game at Alex Box Stadium. Yes, you dropped the first two games on a road trip at Arkansas. And yet, here we are, Monday morning, Memorial Day, and we know for a fact, even though it hasn't been finalized, that LSU is going to be playing more games at Alex Box Stadium. That's because the Tigers put on a show at the SEC tournament. They started off winning the single elimination game versus South Carolina. They moved on. Now, they lost that epic game to Mississippi State that took 2 days, essentially. It was two games, 17-inning affair. They lost. They had to come back, play in the loser's bracket, beat Auburn, and did so in wild fashion late last week off an error and a wild pitch and then a throwing error. And then what do? They move on. And they face Mississippi State. And absolutely curb-stomped Mississippi State. Whooped them. Run-ruled Mississippi State at the SEC tournament. The Tigers ran out of gas, though, on Saturday against Vandy, the number one ranked team in the country, the top team in the SEC. But that run to the semifinals was enough to get the Tigers into hosting a regional. Latest projections by two sources, D1 Baseball. This was their projected field yesterday before the conference tournament championship games were completed. They had LSU getting the number 14 national seed, hosting the regional, and having Miami and Southern, who's already punched their ticket by winning the SWAC championship a couple weeks ago. Baseball America, meanwhile, one of their last projections before conference tournament championships wrapped up, had LSU as a projected number 13 seed national, hosting the regional with Baylor, Florida State, and Go Pokes. That's right, Mini State. Congratulations, by the way, to the Mini State Cowboys. They were a 500 team. They went into the Southland Conference Tournament over there in Sugar Land, Texas, took care of business, winning the whole thing. They punched their ticket. Either way, it looks like, even though it will be made official later today by noon when the NCAA releases all of the teams and all of the regionals, what we do know this morning, though, is that Baton Rouge is hosting a regional. The sites have been decided, just not all the teams. But if Baton Rouge is hosting a regional, you know that LSU is going to be hosting it. That will become official later today. By the way, make sure to tune in to Bumper Sports later today for a special Memorial Day edition of that show. Ben Love, the good brother, will be breaking that down with the world-famous CD, talking about all that. So LSU is in. This is a team that was reeling, plagued by arm soreness, by pitching staffs. They found a way. The bullpen was magnificent for the Tigers at the SEC tournament. Absolutely phenomenal performance by the bullpen. They stepped up and they needed to. They didn't have a choice. They competed in a 17-inning affair. They had to get it done. Didn't have a choice. There was no way around it. They had to step up, and guys did. Whether it was Devin Fondo, whether it was George, whether it was Hess, whether it was Peterson, whether it was Costello, it didn't matter. They threw everyone out there, and everyone stepped up to do their part to get them through the SEC tournament, and they had to do it the hard way because they got dropped down into the loser's bracket after that 17-inning affair versus Mississippi State Wednesday night into Thursday morning. And then they had to turn around on literally 4 hours of sleep and play Auburn, which they won in dramatic fashion, and then they absolutely manhandled the Fighting Cowbells. They needed two wins. I said it on the show. They needed two wins to host a regional. They got more than two. They got more than two, and they're going to be at home. And they are now, not only are they going to be hosting a regional when the pairings come out later today, they don't have to worry about being matched up with the number one or the number two overall national seed. They have a more favorable matchup. And one of the projections from Sunday had them playing, if they won their own regional, that they would play, guess what? Mississippi State. Because they have Mississippi State hosting a regional there in Starkville. Absolutely outstanding performance by the LSU baseball team. They took care of business. Now they've punched their ticket to the NCAA regionals. They will host. I personally would like to see McNeese State in the regional with them instead of Southern. Southern shares a city with LSU. Why not reward those young men for winning their conference tournament down in New Orleans and have them travel somewhere, have them be able to experience an NCAA regional outside of the city limit of Baton Rouge? Send them to Nashville. Send them to College Station. Keep McNeese here locally and let Southern go. We'll talk about that with our first guest today, Kerrick Jackson. He's going to come up in the first segment. He's the second-year head coach of the Southern baseball team. He's done a tremendous job. I want to get his thoughts on where he would like to go. So congratulations to the LSU baseball team. The LSU softball team, meanwhile, fell just short. They reached the Supers. They had to go play in Minneapolis against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Minnesota took the first two games, punched their ticket to the College World Series there in Oklahoma City. Tremendous year for LSU softball. They finished 43-19 overall. And look, this is a team that struggled coming down the stretch. We've talked about it on this show. They stumbled late in the regular season. They were eliminated early from the SEC tournament. They took care of business in their own regional. To get to a super after fading like they did towards the end of the regular season is an accomplishment. And the LSU softball team has nothing to hang their head about. They wrap up their season 43-19. So congratulations to them. Also, big up once again to McNeese State. I mean, just that's what postseason baseball is all about. They went into the Southland Conference Tournament as the 5 seed and won the whole thing. And now have punched their ticket, and they're going to play an NCAA regional. It's amazing how that happens, that a team, that's baseball. A team can get hot, and that's all that matters. And that's what they did. And congratulations to Justin Hill. He's a former assistant coach at Northwestern State. He's done a tremendous job there at McNeese. That's their first Southland Conference championship, I do believe, since 2003. The Cowboys have a good baseball program. And even though it is a holiday and we have a tremendous jam-packed show for you, we do have to get some sad news. Over the weekend, over the holiday weekend, some sad news coming out of Auburn, that play-by-play man Rod Bramblett and his wife Paula died in an automobile accident over the weekend. You know Rod famously because he was the man on the call for the famous Kick Six game back in 2013, Alabama-Auburn Iron Bowl, where Alabama tries to kick the field goal. The guy returns it back all the way for the game-winning touchdown to stun Alabama and keep them out of the national championship. Rod was on the call, a very much a revered play-by-play man, college broadcaster. You've seen tons of condolences on social media over the weekend. Prayers go out to his family as well as to the University of Auburn for losing one of their own like that. Then on Sunday morning, the sports world got hit with another blow when Bart Starr passed away, the famous University of Alabama quarterback, the first great quarterback in Crimson Tide history, more known for his tremendous Hall of Fame career with the Green Bay Packers. He was the man under center for Vince Lombardi through one of the greatest dynasties in all of professional sports. He passed away at the age of 85. He had suffered a stroke about 4 years ago that kind of affected his health, but condolences to Bart Starr and his family as well as to the University of Alabama and the Green Bay Packers for losing a legend. But we'll end this first segment on a high note. Obviously, LSU is going to find out where they're going to go later today. They're going to be at home. We know this. But who they're going to be facing. Is it going to be Miami? Is it going to be Florida State? There's some intriguing matchups there. Will it be McNeese as the in-state school, or will it be Southern? We'll find out later today. But our NBA finals are set. Stunning. Milwaukee had gone up 2-0, and Toronto, led by Kawhi Leonard, led them to 4 straight victories. It's going to be Toronto versus Golden State. I'm intrigued. We'll dive more into the NBA Finals matchup, which starts later this week, later in the week here on RP3 and Company. Warriors, Raptors. I'm kind of intrigued. Kawhi Leonard, can he carry the Raptors to an upset over a Kevin Durant-less Warriors? Probably not, but we'll stay tuned. Interview with Kerrick Jackson coming up here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline on this very special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company as we welcome on our next guest. He is in his second season at the helm of the Southern Jaguars baseball program. He led them to the regular season championship. They were the top seed for the SWAC baseball tournament that was held down in New Orleans. And sure enough, the Jaguars went through the tournament, claimed the SWAC tournament title. For the first time in a decade, the Jags won the SWAC tournament championship, which means that they punched their ticket to the NCAA regional round of play. They will find out today, later today, where exactly they will be playing, which regional they'll be taking part in. It's our privilege to welcome back to the show the SWAC Coach of the Year, the one and only Kerrick Jackson. Coach, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Appreciate you making time for us today. I know it's a big day. You guys, because you took part and had your conference tournament a little bit earlier than most of the NCAA, you guys are now in a sit-and-wait approach. And later today, you'll find out exactly where you'll be playing more postseason baseball. But let's go back. On the eve of the SWAC tournament, you were named the SWAC Coach of the Year. You had one of your players, Tyler LaPorte, be named Co-Player of the Year. You had one of your pitchers named the Relief Pitcher of the Year. You guys cleaned up on the awards. Let's start there. How humbled were you that you were named the SWAC Coach of the Year?
I think anytime you can be recognized by your fellow coaches as doing something positive, I think that's always a good thing. It's one of those deals where I've told people 1,000 times, yeah, I get Coach of the Year, but I never stepped out there and threw a ball or, you know, took an at bat or did any of those things. So the credit really goes to our players. It goes to our assistant coaches, because if they don't go out and do the things that they're capable of doing, my name never gets mentioned.
We're talking with Kerrick Jackson. He's the head baseball coach at Southern University. The Jaguars are just waiting to find out where they're going to be playing in the NCAA regional round. We find that out later today. Coach, let's talk about the tournament. You started off, you got the W, and then you had to play, it just happened to fall this way because of the way the bracket did, where you had to play Texas Southern three straight times. You edge them by one run, then you lose by two, and then you edge them by another run to punch your ticket to the championship game. Just tell us a little bit about how that was just a knockdown, drag-out fight with Texas Southern for those three games.
Like you said, we played them three times in the tournament. We played them six times in the regular season, so now you're talking about nine times total. And so when you have two teams that are that familiar with each other, and with our regular season contest at their place on Friday night, we lost 1-0. On Saturday, we won 1-0. And on Sunday, we won 8-7. And then they came here and did the same games, some nip and tuck games here as well. I think for our guys, those first four games of the tournament, we had a lot of jitters. And so we dug ourselves into some holes early. And when you're playing a team like Texas Southern, and specifically in that game we lost, the hole was too big and we couldn't climb back out of it.
But yet your team found a way to, you know, they got punched a little bit, but your team found a way, close games, got the job done. How impressed were you with kind of that willpower and that mental fortitude that your team showed in those three games against Texas Southern, Coach?
Oh, I think it goes without saying. You rewind back a year ago where we were 9-33 and we got walked off six times, and this year I think we had four walk-offs. So I think it's a mindset. I think this year the difference for us was we preached all year long that as long as there's outs to be made, there's still opportunities. And our guys believed in that. And the fact that we did have some other walk-off wins earlier in the year gave us that belief system and allowed us to stay positive and just, hey, the lead is irrelevant. It's go out and scratch and claw. And again, as long as there's outs on the board, we still got a chance, and we proved that in the game that we beat them in.
We're talking with Kerrick Jackson, the Southern head baseball coach, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Coach, you get through there, you get tested by Texas Southern in those three games, you get to the championship game, and then y'all just lights out, man. Y'all just played angry and just dominated, 15-0 win in the championship game. Did you expect that? Did you what kind of speech did you give your guys before the championship game, Coach?
No, I didn't expect it. I'd like to take credit for the speech that I gave, but the reality of it is I think it was what helped us in that championship game was the fact that we had a 2.5 hour, actually ended up being more than a 2.5 hour rain delay, but game was supposed to start at 11:30, didn't start till 3:30, so it was a 4 hour delay for us, but we went back to the hotel. They had already stripped our beds on our rooms, so they gave us a conference room, and our guys just kind of laid out and lounged. And so I think that nervous energy and nervous excitement that they had was able to be worn off and then allowed us to just come out, be relaxed. We talked about a plan that we wanted to have at the plate with, you had Kelly going, who was the pitcher of the year in our conference, ERA below three, which any conference, I don't care where you play in, that's unheard of at the college level. So you knew that guy was going to bring it, but we also knew he was a two-pitch guy. And so we talked about the idea of eliminating one of his pitches, which was going to be the breaking ball. I told them to pick a side of the plate. I didn't care which side of the plate they picked, but pick a side of the plate with less than two strikes. And if it's there, let it eat. And if it's not, you got to be disciplined and focused enough to take it. They bought into the approach, and we were able to capitalize.
Coach, with your team having its tournament already wrapped up so much earlier than everyone else, you have a lot more downtime than, say, some of the other teams that are going to be playing in the NCAA regional round. So what are you doing to keep your Jaguars sharp, focus during this downtime?
We're obviously we continue to practice, and then you're just putting a more competitive spin on practice. You're challenging them to be competitive in that environment. And, you know, we'll have some bunting contests. We'll have some scrimmages inter-squad, and we'll put some consequences on it to where there's something for them to play for. Because obviously at this time of the year, when you're just playing against each other, the idea of doing that is kind of worn off and it doesn't have the same excitement. But then when you put something on the line, that gets them going just a little bit more. So doing those kind of things all week in preparation and continuing to do those things leading up to the regional to basically keep them in that competitive mindset.
We're talking with Kerrick Jackson, Southern head baseball coach, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Well, Coach, let's kind of wrap it up with this. Look, you've had a terrific season, 30-plus wins. You won the SWAC regular season championship. You won the West Division title. Then you went on and won the tournament championship for the first time in a decade. Now you're just waiting to figure out where you're going to play and who you're going to play for the NCAA regional round of competition. Do you have any preferences? Does it matter? Or are you just ready to get back out there, have your team go, travel, and get back on the baseball field?
You know what? I think what I'm hoping is that the committee, when they look at picking places to send teams, that they look at our institution, they look at our kids, and with the push that we're making to get more black kids involved in the game, that they give our kids an experience. You know, it'll be real easy that if LSU ends up with being able to host to send us to LSU because we're right here in town, but then I think you're denying our kids the experience and the opportunity of going through that regional atmosphere. And with kids being able to go through that and go someplace else and have that experience, and now being able to share that with other kids, I think that could help us out tremendously. So, again, at the end of the day, we're in. I'm happy that we're in. I'm not going to turn down an invite to go anywhere, but I'm just hoping that if LSU does end up hosting, that they pick someplace and they send us someplace else.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you making some time for us. Congratulations once again on everything that you and your staff and your team has been able to accomplish this season. And best of luck to you this week for the NCAA Regionals.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
That's Southern head baseball coach Kerrick Jackson. His team has already punched their ticket to the NCAA Regional by winning the SWAC tournament. Now they're just waiting to find out later today who they're going to play and where they're going to play. So best of luck to Coach and the rest of the Jaguars. We got to hit a break on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. He is the Presidente, the Dean Cain, the bee's knees, the man, the myth, the legend himself. He is Acadiana Sports. It's the one and only, from KLFY, our good buddy, George Faust. Fausty, how are you doing on this Memorial Day, my friend?
Doing great, man. Always a pleasure to talk with you, and looking forward to a great little day off. I'm probably going to work today, but it's all good. These days are made for working, though, because it's a lot easier at the office. A lot of people aren't there, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, brother. I know what you mean, but I appreciate you making the time for us out, as always, Fausty. I want to start off talking about the Raging Cajun baseball team. Their season came to an end early once again at the Sun Belt Conference tournament. That took place on Thursday, where they had to play the morning game. They went up early, appeared to be in a good position to beat the men of Troy, but then ended up losing 10-7. Their season comes to an end, 28-31 overall, .500 in Sun Belt Conference play. what do you take away from this year's Raging Cajuns baseball team?
Well, it was a disappointing end to the season. I felt like at the beginning of the year, I mean, they were picked to win the West and the Sun Belt. It was a year where a lot of things that they can't control happened to them. And in baseball, you have to control what you can control and just deal with everything else. And I think that was the hard part for them because it snowballed on the Cajuns quick. I mean, obviously, not having Gunner as your Friday night starter for the whole year, basically, it makes it very difficult to get your team off on the right foot in a conference series or in a three-game set. And so I think that kind of threw them off a little bit. And then the young pitchers that Coach Robichaud had, they didn't get, as he uses the term, weathered. They didn't get weathered and handle that well enough to continue the season at a high level or at the level that the Cajun program is used to performing. So with regards to the disappointment level, I think is very high. And I guarantee you there's nobody more disappointed than Coach Robichaud and the staff there for the Cajun baseball program because they've set a new standard with regards to where they want to go. And I think obviously they didn't hit what their standard was for this year. But I'm not completely ready to throw all the cards out and give me a new deck yet.
We're talking with George Fowles. He's the KLFY Sports Director here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. George, you mentioned Gunnar Leje. That had a huge domino effect on this year's Cajuns team. And Gunnar, you just want to pull for him because he had to miss all of last year. He had the two surgeries. He never seemed to kind of regain the form that we saw from a couple of seasons ago. Do you still think he has an opportunity to pitch at the next level, maybe coming out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I think what they were trying to do this year with regards to the Cajuns handling Gunnar, I believe they were trying to make sure he had that opportunity and still get whatever they could get out of him at that level. Because, I mean, think about it. He could have completely walked away a year ago, rehab, and then be in the minors this year, you know? So I do think there's an opportunity for him at the next level because you never know how he's going to – I mean, somebody will take a chance on him. Everybody's looking for a good lefty, and he's definitely got the ability to make that happen if he works hard. And he's got one of the most focused work ethics, pinpoint work ethics that I've ever heard about. So I think with regards to his ability to play on the next level, I think that's completely there. Now, if his body gives him trouble, who knows on that, but his arm, Coach Robichaud said earlier in the year, it was inflammation in his elbow. They didn't want to push it because not only do you have to worry about his season this year, but you have to think about the kid's future because that is what the goal is. Eventually when you have a talent like that. So I think they handled it the best they could. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. You don't want to ruin a kid just for the sake of a couple of wins, throughout the season. And so I think that's the way Coach Robichaud approached it. And I think it was the right approach, to be honest with you, because I do believe that he has an opportunity, even with the injuries, because eventually you're going to get over that. It's going to get better. It just takes, rehab and getting the right training, treatments and things of that nature. So and Gunner's going to be a guy who knows how to battle, So if there's going to be a challenge, he'll be able to handle it, I think, in the future and have a shot at the next level in some way, shape, or form.
We're talking with George Fowles, KLFY Sports Director, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. George, this team, even though they had a disappointing season, they do lose a lot of firepower off of this team. Gunnar Leje will be gone. Hanson Monica will be gone. okay? Todd Lott, who had a breakout season, finally had the season we all thought he could, a great all-conference selection, he will be gone. Brennan Brough will likely be gone as well as his eligibility runs out. And we're not for sure if O'Neal Lockridge will come back, even though he does have another year. He's kind of focusing on grad school, the former STM star. And Oran Vaillant is another one that will be gone. That's a lot of bats. That's a lot of leadership. That's a lot of guys. What do you think the makeup of this team is going to be like next year?
That's a great question. That's hard to know. I do know that the coaching staff for the Cajuns, they are hardcore working on getting guys in, getting new guys in. You know, the recruits that they can bring in, and you're right. I mean, they do lose a ton, and I think what makes it a little bit disconcerting is the fact that this year was supposed to be one of the bigger years for the program, and it didn't happen that way because of, you know, we've talked about it, injuries, and the bats failed them early in the season. They were unable to kind of get their act together. They finally got that going a little too late in the tail end of the season when Hansa Monica kind of picked it up. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they're going to lose a lot of firepower, and here's what we don't know in the media. It is who's working their tail off, and Coach Rose talks about it all the time. I'm a big Coach Rose fan, in case you can't tell. I really like
him. So am I, George. So am I. He's one of my favorites.
And I just think, like work while you wait is one of his phrases. So we don't know who's busting their tail to take that next spot. Who's going to come up and be the catcher or the first baseman? You know, who's been working their tail off that we don't see every day? Like, you know, those guys, those are the guys who are going to kind of peak, you know, come to the top and now have to take over and play a major or a more important role on this team. So while it doesn't look bright to the naked eye or to the average fan, and that might not be the case. They might have, you know, three studs that just weren't able to work their way into the lineup. Or maybe they, you know, just something didn't gel right, and then those guys will rise to the top. So, does it look grim right now? Absolutely, it doesn't look promising. But who knew that this season looks super promising? Right at the beginning of the year, everybody was like, "Oh, Cajuns are going to be number one in the West. They're going to take care of business. It's going to be great." And it didn't turn out that way. So. You never know. I mean, that's why I love the Robism, work while you wait. And so that's exactly what they're going to have to do is those guys that we don't see every day, but Coach Robes and Coach Baz and all those guys they see at practice nonstop. You know, that's going to be the group that has to step up. And maybe we're talking about, you know, four other powerhouses that come up, next season. You know, it's just the way it works, and it doesn't look great right now, but that doesn't mean it can't be great.
George, let me ask you this. 2016 is the UL baseball team that won 43 games, won 21 games in conference play, and that's the team that lost a tough regional, which they hosted against Arizona, who ended up going on to the College World Series. But since then, it's been a slight decline in 2017, they won 35 games, got eliminated in the first round of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. The next year, only 34 wins, only played three games in the conference tournament, no NCAA regional. And then this year, 28 wins, 500 in conference play, and once again, only three games in the conference tournament. Is this a trend, or is this just a blip, in your opinion?
I really think it's a blip because, look, remember in that 2014 season, nobody expected. The year before, everybody was, like, calling for Coach Rhodes. And,
you know, I remember,
to make a change. And it was 2013. That 2014 season, they end up going all the way to the Supers, hosting a Super Regional against Ole Miss. And they actually won the first game of that Regional, that Super, and then lost the next two. And so – I think people in general, especially in a sport like baseball, where you can kind of get lost in a lot of numbers. You have to look at the whole situation. I know. I think there's more good that can come out of it as opposed to bad. I don't think you need to jump the gun on anything at the moment. If you get what I'm saying,
I
think there's still a lot of winning to be done. So that's the way I feel about it.
Well,
that's why I
asked the question, George, because you're the Dean Cain El Presidente. You're the institution, brother. I needed that insight. I didn't need just a hot take. I needed a thought-out response to my question.
No, I think there's a lot more winning that Coach Robichaux and his staff can do. And if we were talking about a coach that hadn't done it before and hadn't – I mean, look, baseball's up and down. I mean, he says it all the time. Baseball's a game of failure, and it is. You bat 300 in the major leagues. 3 out of 10 times you get a hit, and you're a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, there's things in baseball. Baseball's not like football where it's just it's a different dynamic with that sport. And so you kind of have to – he knows what he's doing. And if he didn't know what he was doing, I would feel concerned. But I'm talking about Coach Robes. He knows what he's doing. So you don't have to get concerned that he's not going to turn it around or, you know, something. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And I think I know Dr. Maggard likes he wants it to happen now and he wants success and all that's fine. But I have a feeling it's coming. It's just a matter of, you know, remember the Cajuns, as much as they are a great baseball program, a great softball program, still considered a mid-major program,
right.
So so he's still got to battle all the mid-major issues that a mid-major goes through. So he's still dealing with all that, and in the meantime, he's putting forth a product that is you know, this past year was marred by injuries and a lack of hitting that didn't come on till late. So there were issues that popped up. Every program has issues. But what I'm saying is that with a mid-major, you might have a few more than if you were at a big SEC school or something like that.
We're talking with George Fowles of KLFY. He's the sports director right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 & Company. George, one last question. I'll let you go so you can enjoy your day with your family. The UL softball team, that's going to sting. Yeah, they won 50-plus games. Keeley Milligan sets the stolen base record. Summer Ellison is named Pitcher of the Year. They dominate the conference awards. They don't lose a single Sun Belt Conference game. And they had your beloved Rebels on the ropes in the Oxford Regional and only needed to win one game of the last two on that Sunday, and they drop them both. That's going to sting for a while for this program, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it will sting. But I think more so it's a testament to how strong this team is, not them losing, but them getting to that position, because we know all the turmoil that happened off the field for the disappointment for Coach Glasgow and him losing his daughter. And those girls, they dealt with that, they put it aside, and they were ready to go play. And whatever happened, they were going to do in the memory of Jerry Yang and make sure that Coach Glasgow knew they were there for him. And they did a great job of it. They played a phenomenal season. I mean, the 52 wins, that's undefeated in the Sun Belt Conference. There's a lot of things to look at this program and go, hey, there's the future is bright. And now people didn't know a few years ago whether or not, you know, when Coach Glasgow took over, they weren't sure if that was going to be the case. And a lot of fans were kind of on the fence about Coach Glasgow, but now I think they see that he's got a real knack for coaching these young ladies and doing a great job. And I think that they're very calm with where the program for Cajun softball is, and how I've said this year for years that the best, the most, the program that brings the University of Louisiana the most notoriety in an athletic standpoint is the softball team. They're the ones that are most consistently playing for a national championship with regards to going to College World Series, Women's College World Series. So it's all that's a sacred program at this university. And so he's when they put it into his hands, they did a good thing, I think. And he's got a lot of connections in softball and the softball world, and he's definitely one of the bright spots of the softball program moving forward.
George Fausti, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the holiday with your family. Get a little work in, but make sure to spend some quality time with the fam. And we'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Talk to you later.
That's George Fausti, KFY Sports Director, giving us his insight, recapping both the Raging Cajuns baseball season and the Raging Cajuns softball season. Right here on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break, but we'll be back right after this, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Tremendous first hour is coming to a close here on a very special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Had a tremendous interview with Kerrick Jackson, the head coach of the Southern baseball team. His team will find out its fate later today, when the NCAA regional field is completed and released. That'll happen around 12:30 to 1 o'clock later this afternoon. So make sure to tune in to Bumper Sports Special Memorial Day Edition later today between 4 and 6 o'clock, and they'll be able to give you all the details of where Southern is going to be headed. So terrific news for the Jaguars. Also, George Fausti did a tremendous job breaking down the seasons for the Raging Cajun baseball team and the softball team. Bit of a punch of the gut for the softball team, the way things ended, but still a tremendous season. And George also talked about how he did not think this was a trend for the UL baseball team. Since 2016, they've gone year by year winning less games and not making the NCAA regional. Despite losing all those players that they have off of this year's team, Aron Vaillant, Brennan Bro, Gunnar Leger, and so many more, Handsome Monica, Todd Lott, George believes that this team can get things done. Tony Robichaud and his staff are going to turn this around. So we'll see.
Raymond, I don't believe I've been able to say happy Memorial Day to you just yet, so I want to wish you a happy Memorial Day, friend. It is Memorial Day. It is also, I believe, finally the day that Detective Pikachu has reached its out of the spoiler window there. So heads up, everybody, if you don't want this, but I'm sorry, I have kept it in for far too long. It has to come out of me now. The best part of Detective Pikachu, Raymond, Ryan Reynolds was actually in the movie. He showed up at the end in like the last 2 minutes of the movie. He was not just the voice of Pikachu. We saw the immaculate body, the person himself that is Ryan Reynolds. I popped so hard for that. Oh, and mega spoiler alert, it absolutely turns out that Pikachu, yeah, he's Tim's dad the whole time.
Cody shoots, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with Pika, not sports talk.
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
What happened? I blacked out.
You were possessed.
I just spoiled that entire movie. It's only like an hour and 25 minutes, but I spoiled the whole thing.
Happy Memorial Day, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Memorial Day. That's going to do it for this first hour of this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Coming up, hour two, we got Brady Amon for some old school wrestling talk, as well as Danny Broussard, longtime head boys basketball coach there at STM. He got his camps coming up. He's going to recap the year it was for STM Athletics, plus much, much more. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah.
live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Coming up this hour, we got a Danny Broussard, friend of the station, frequent guest on all the shows. I'm pretty for certain he's even been a guest on the world-famous Clint D. Show. If not, we'll book him soon.
What does pretty for certain mean?
That's just gibberish on a holiday. That's what that is. That's called gibberish.
I apologize.
Yeah, no need to apologize. We'll have Danny Broussard coming up later this hour at the 7:32 spot. Up next, in the next segment, we're going to talk a little wrestling. That's right, old school wrestling talk.
Yeah, brother, get ready for the Memorial Day and the wrestling talk. Up, brother, because the cream rises to the top.
Sorry. Oh, that's a good. I like that. That's a good one.
You got to do the fingers.
Oh, you got to do the fingers.
If you don't do the fingers,
you got to be animated. Brady Amon's going to come on and join us and give us his thoughts on why it is needed to have a legit professional wrestling federation to compete, or at least just exist in the universe of WWE, rather.
We're setting the bar low here. Just exist.
Past experience says that's what we should do. Let's just hope that the new wrestling league will not go the way of the American Alliance of Football did.
Or WCW.
Or WCW. Or any other outfit that's...
The WWE Impact Zone.
The eater of all worlds. Oh, you're mildly successful? Chomp, 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 chomp. Come here.
That's Bray Wyatt's old gimmick, eater of worlds.
Thank you.
He's not a fat guy no more, though. Now he's a mask-wearing guy.
And he's scary.
Terrifying.
And we love it. But before we get to all of that on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company, it's time for a Louisiana wrap-up.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
A Memorial Day edition of the Louisiana wrap-up. I don't know how many people are traveling on a Memorial Day, but RP3 and Company is traveling, and we're going to take our first trip to NOLA, the Crescent City, RP3. What you got?
Some sad news. This broke after we went off the air on Friday's show, but I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge it. One of the best sports figures to ever do it out of the state of Louisiana passed away on Friday morning at the age of 80. Otis Washington, the well-known head coach at St. Aug down there in New Orleans. He also coached at LSU and at Southern. He led St. Augustine to 3 state championships there in the late 70s, 1975, 78, and 79. He then would go on to take on the role as the O-line coach at LSU, becoming the first black coach at LSU, which is a distinction worth mentioning. He would later go on to become the head coach for the Southern Jaguars before retiring. He was inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in 2015. So all of our condolences to the families and friends of Otis Washington, one of the best to ever do it, a legend, a Hall of Famer. He passed away late last week. So our thoughts are with him and his family.
Yeah, he seems to be the guy that's kind of put St. Aug on the map where they still remain today. Let's continue our trip. We're going to leave the state, hop over the state line there maybe, and let's go to Jacksonville. I know not a lot of people say that, but let's go to Jacksonville.
A lot of people don't willingly say, let's go to Jacksonville.
But I did it twice. Let's do it.
The NCAA East prelims are being held out there in Jacksonville at Hodges Stadium. And LSU has already had a couple guys punch their tickets over the weekend. Keenan Jones, Rayan Gray, and Juvon Harrison, log jumpers. They did it late last week. But also late last week, and of importance to us here in Acadiana, is, of course, Mondo Duplantis.
Mondo!
The indoor and outdoor collegiate record holder and the young man who already won the indoor championship for the NCAAs. Guess what? He punched his ticket to the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships that would be held in Austin. He only had to clear 17-1 and 17-5. He did it both in Jacksonville. Easy breezy. He's going to march on over to Austin, where Duplantis is going to look to add another national championship to his resume.
Lest we forget, he is an Olympian, an Olympic level athlete. So winning these college
he could be getting bank.
Right.
Because that's the thing that people don't realize,
man.
Right. Track and field athletes make good money across the world.
Right. Maybe not at home, but he doesn't even compete Olympically, internationally. He doesn't even compete for the USA. He competes for Sweden.
That's correct.
So he's fine. It's like what Tyler Nunes said last Friday on the show. Mondo Duplantis is only here because he wants to train at LSU's facilities. His brother's here. His family is here.
His parents went there. His parents fell in love there. They met. They fell in love. Yes.
Otherwise, he's an Olympic-level athlete, and we should be happy and thankful that we get to call him an LSU Tiger.
And from Acadiana.
Of course, always. Acadiana is produced. We could go on for 30 minutes about the types of athletes and chefs and just people in general that Acadiana produces.
Worth of, tops of that list, obviously, is the world-famous CD.
Oh, Clint Domang, always. Forever and 100 years. Let's continue on. Maybe Clint Domang will want to hop on this trip of the Louisiana wrap-up. We're going up north, though. It might be still a little cold. I don't know. You tell me. What's the weather like in Indy?
It's May, so it's not cold.
Oh, thank God. I don't go up north. I don't know what the weather
is. I lived in Central Illinois for 6 years. It's not exactly cold up there right now. Mark Emmert, you remember he was the man in charge there at LSU for quite a long time. He's the NCAA president. Well, despite the NCAA dealing with multiple scandals, including that FBI corruption trial that Will Wade had his name involved in and Sean Miller, despite all of that, and despite black eyes after black eyes, Mark Emmert is getting himself quite the race. His base salary is jumping up from $2.4 million to $3.9 million. Despite everything that's going on, the man in charge up there in Indianapolis, where the NCAA's headquarters is at, is getting himself a hefty raise in an era where athletes are still not getting paid.
Get money, Mark.
Hey, I'm all about people getting their money, but that's a good look for the NCAA. Continue.
We cannot pay these kids. I would like my raise now, please. Let's make one more stop on this Memorial Day edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up. I've never been here before. I don't know if I've ever heard of it, but I do know something that's legal there. Grand Junction, Colorado is where we're at. Raymond, what do you got for us?
We don't have time to talk about what's legal there.
We sure don't.
A great moment over the weekend, Friday night. Delgado Community College's longtime head baseball coach, Joe Sherman, based out of New Orleans there. He eclipsed 1,000 wins this year. He's been the head man since 1990, one of the best in the business. He became the first Louisiana coach to be enshrined into the JUCO Coaches Hall of Fame there in Colorado on Friday night. So congratulations to Delgado Community College's own Joe Sherman for receiving esteemed honor. Congrats to him. That's going to do it for our Louisiana wrap-up. We got to hit a break.
We went all over the place in that one. I don't know, that might be the most miles accumulated in one Louisiana wrap-up. We have to check the books.
You're welcome.
You keep those books, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. Hour two is off and running on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. When we come back here on 103.7 The Game, we're going to talk some old school wrestling talk with Brady Amon right here after this.
school wrestling talk with the tag team duo of RP3 and Brady.
Oh, hell yeah!
Ray is the former Demolition Fan Club president, Southeast Chapter.
The Demolition, walking disaster!
And the innovator of a devastating move called the Gator Lock. Brady is the 10-time Willow Street Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champion. And he once shook hands with One Man Gang. Time for some old school wrestling talk.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game for the special Memorial Day edition of the show. It's time now to head back out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our old friend. He was my co-host for old school wrestling talk on the Rap Game. It's my good friend, the Port Barry native himself, the legend, Brady Amon. Brady, how are you doing this morning?
Did you just call me old?
I said old friend. How is it old friend?
Okay. I don't know if you meant like, you know, old friend as we go way back or old friend as, you know, he's ancient.
Old as dirt. Look, man, people don't need to know about your exactly how old you are, Brady.
Exactly. I think you'll probably find it out on the internet these days. You know?
Look, man, I wanted to have you on for this Memorial Day edition. You and I really aren't into the new school wrestling, but there's something that is developing that I thought we could both talk about as old school wrestling fans, and that is All Elite Wrestling. That's the AEW. They had their big event over the weekend, the Double or Nothing show, where Dustin and Cody Rhodes battled each other. Now, they are the sons of the legend, the American Dream himself, Dusty Rhodes, and they've created this new outfit, this new federation, and the WWE has spent years kind of dominating. You can make the argument that they've been a monopoly, but I remember growing up where there were other regional outfits, right? And there were other wrestling federations, and it was good for the business. It seemed that way to me. Your initial thoughts, even though you may not know a lot about it, your initial thoughts of the Rhodes brothers, of all people, stepping up and creating another wrestling federation out there?
I think it's fitting because, you know, obviously they grew up in the territory, the territorial wars era. You know, their dad was a big part of that, you know, bouncing around from Mid-South to WCW to World Class Champion. And, you know, Dusty Rhodes was one of those guys that he was all over every territory. And so they grew up with that. They grew up knowing that there was more than one wrestling. There was more than one association. You know, pretty much every popular at least the South, the Shore, had some form of wrestling in their state. So it's fitting that they're the ones that are kind of grabbing that torch, so to speak, and trying to create something that mimics that, or something that will at least give WWE some competition. Because like you said, for the last, you know, I don't know how many years since they bought out WCW, ECW, it's been stale, or it's gotten stale because they have all the talent. You know, there's Ring of Honor. There's still small independent circuits. But there's nothing that is going to be nationally televised like AEW will eventually. I think they signed up with TNT. So it's fitting that these guys are the ones that are trying to bring back more of those wrestling wars. And to me, that's when wrestling was at its height, was when WCW, you know, the Raw Nitro Wars. To me, that was when you tuned in and you were bouncing back and forth to see what each wrestling organization was doing that night. And ultimately, you would end up sticking with one, and that's kind of why, you know, that's why I think it was so good back then, because it kind of forced you to look at the other one just to see, take a look. Right now, WWE has no competition. You know, Monday nights, you know what you're doing. So when SmackDown's on, you know what you're doing. Pay-per-views, you know what you're doing. There's really no competition for them. So I like it. You know, I think we need it in wrestling. I think you need that competition. You need something that where wrestlers have an option and fans have an option to go elsewhere.
We're talking with Brady Amon here on the Arco Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Yeah, and the other thing that I think was a sound decision by the Rhodes boys with this All Elite Wrestling is that they went out and got a WWE Hall of Famer, Jim Ross, to be their announcer. And, you know, the WWE phased him out, right? He only had done the Greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, and then Raw 25 in 2018.
and they were phasing him out. He leaves. That also gives this federation, this new league, if you will, some credibility, especially with generations of fans of wrestling, old school and new school, that revere Jim Ross, and they're going to tune in for that as well.
Yeah, the way Jim Ross was handled by WWE is really bad, especially considering, you know, Jim Ross had a lot to do with the success of WWE. It was his personality, but the way he sold those matches as an announcer, and behind the scenes stuff. You know, people forget that he was a talent guy for a long, long time, and he was the guy that went out and got a lot of these guys that WWE leaned on for a long time. He was the one that was making those things happen behind the scenes. So the way they just kind of phased him out and really just kind of cast him aside, and like you said, they kind of used him just sparingly, I think is good. I did see an interview with him talking about how this was kind of a renewal for him. It felt like he could pick up where WWE kind of left off, and he can continue to do it. You know, I mean, he's one of those guys who's going to do this forever, because it's not like it's hard on his body. He's not wrestling. You know, he's just doing his thing. So I like that. You know, and they got Jericho, and they got some other people that Billy Gunn. They got guys that left WWE, whether it was good terms or bad terms, whatever. But they're looking for a new start. And I think they're going to start to attract some of those guys that are starting to, at the end of their contract at WWE, they get tired of the way they're being treated over there, and they may come over to this new organization. And, you know, that'll continue to add more credibility to it.
And here's the other thing, Brady, that I find interesting, which will allow the AEW to kind of stay afloat for a while, is that, you know, this is a promotion backed by the Khan father-son duo. They're the billionaires. They own the Jacksonville Jaguars. They own the English soccer club Fulham FC. And they love wrestling. So this is, you know, you get the money with the billionaires, sports owners, they're wrestling fanatics. You get two guys that are legacy wrestlers. I mean, it doesn't get much better than the Rhodes, right? And then you get all these other guys. You get Jim Ross. This is a great start. This is kind of how to do it. This is very much a successful template to me of how to create a new federation. And if I'm the WWE, I love this. I love the competition because it makes my brand better. It's going to make me and my company's creative staff with the storylines and everything like that, even though I love the Bray Wyatt storyline that they have going on right now, which is the most interesting thing that they have as a product. But if you're doing this, this will help you become more creative. This will help you get better wrestlers and create better storylines, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the irony is, it's billionaire versus billionaire, similar to those WCW, WWE, when you had Ted Turner backing them. That's probably been the thing that, you know, Vince has been able to squeeze out the competition because he has more money. He has more power. He has more things at his disposal. He was able to squeeze out Bill Watts. He was able to squeeze out those guys because he was way more powerful and had a lot more money than them. It's easy to buy out the competition. When you're going up against someone that could buy you out similarly, it's tougher. And you go back and you look, you talk, I mean, you watch podcasts or videos of guys like Jim Cornette, Jimmy Hart, Bruce Pritchard, that were there for those WCW, WWE wars, and they'll tell you straight up that made WWE a better promotion because they were forced to come up with more interesting storylines. They were forced to, the wrestlers had to perform, because if they didn't perform, somebody was going to flip the channel on them, and they were going to the other promotion. So it did force them. And I do think the last couple of years, they've gotten stale with their storylines. They haven't followed through with a lot of them. And then the ones that they have followed through, it just kind of left you wondering, like, what just happened? So I think this is going to force them to be a little bit more creative with their storylines and maybe try to make their wrestlers develop a little bit better and not rush down. Because I think what they're doing is rushing a lot of people through, putting them, elevating them to the top, and when they fall, they just fall flat. And then they try to elevate another person. They're not, like, you know, we always say that. Back in the day, they allowed guys a year or two to grow and become who they were. Now they're just propping them up right off the bat, seeing if it's going to stick. And if it doesn't stick, well, we got another guy on the roster that we can pull up. So,
and the other thing, Brady, and the other thing for me is this. Vince McMahon is putting up his own money for the XFL 2.0. So it's not as if he just has enormous, you know, he's dedicated to building a football league. this is a perfect time to create another wrestling league because of that, in my opinion.
Yeah, because we saw what happened with that secondary league that started. And it was doing well. It just didn't have the money. The longevity is going to be tough. And he's going to face the same thing with the XFL, too. So, yeah, this is kind of one of those strike while the iron is hot situations, while the scenario is perfectly in place. And, for someone to come swoop in. And, we hear a lot of stories about the WWE talent. A lot of them are not happy there, but there's nowhere to go. It's when you're the biggest game in town, you're the only game in town. You either go there or you go to the Comic-Con circuit and you go sign autographs, in Pensacola and Mobile and Birmingham. That's what you end up doing.
And Lafayette. So, don't forget about Lafayette, Brady.
Exactly. I think it's going to be, I'm excited about it, and especially because of Rhodes. I love Dusty Rhodes. That was one of my favorite wrestlers growing up. I thought he was, his personality was just amazing, and the way he was able to do things in the ring and outside the ring. I mean, he's just one of the best. So, and his kids inherited that wrestling knowledge. They know how to run an organization. So you got the money with the cons that are going to basically just tell them, you do what you got to do, and we'll take care of the bills. And then these guys are going to do a great job of running it. And I think that they're popular in with wrestlers, so it'll be easy for them. We didn't talk about it, but TNA, I don't think a lot of people like Dixie Carter. Like, I don't think they got along with her, and that's the reason why she was, a lot of people were in and out of the door over there. So maybe with the Rhodes being there, there's someone that kind of knows how to treat the wrestlers, someone that's not just a business person but is a wrestler, has a wrestling background, I think is going to help. And we might see a few people that come and get, and come into AEW as soon as their contract is up.
Brady, great stuff as always, my friend. You enjoy today, the holiday, with you and your family. Have a great time, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Sounds good, Ray.
That's Brady Amon joining us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on the special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break. But we'll be back after this, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company as we head out on the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He really doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. He's the longtime head coach of the St. Thomas More boys basketball team. He's won multiple state championships, including this past season when they won yet another title. He also serves as the alumni director there at STM. He's a friend of the program and a friend of the show. Let's welcome back Danny Broussard. Coach, how are you this morning, brother?
Man, doing great. Doing great. We're having on this nice Memorial Day. It's a great day. Just enjoying myself. Raymond, I don't know if I told you, but I just had my first grandkid, so, man, I'm really pumped up. I've been spending a lot of time with him, trying to spoil him already, it's been a great month for me, for sure.
Well, congratulations on the addition to your family, Coach. My first question to you then is, how long before you put a basketball in that little baby's hands?
that's a good question. He's already got one already.
Coach already doing his job.
Hey, but Raymond, here's the problem though. His dad was a big soccer player. Soccer and basketball are kind of the same time of the year. So I don't know. We may have some possible conflicts up here. So I'm going to say I would let the daddy raise the kid. But I'll support him whatever he does. Soccer, basketball, really doesn't matter. Who knows? And I'd play anything. But just really, really glad to have a nice, healthy baby. That's the main thing. So. Really, really excited about that. And he's cute like his grandpa, too. So that's another good thing.
He's cute like his grandpa too. I like that. I like that. Well, let's just hope that he's got your dynamic personality, Coach. Because if he's got that, he's going to go a long way, brother.
Well, I appreciate that. We'll see.
Well, Coach, let's talk a little bit. You know, you're just not the boys' basketball coach. You're also the alumni director. You go to all the events. You're communicating with past stars there for the Cougars, as well as just parents and other supporters. What a year, though, for St. Thomas More athletics across the board. I just want to take a moment here to look over it. The football team reached the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. They lost the title game to U High in one of the more exciting games of all time. Then volleyball reached the state semifinals. They ended up losing to Cabrini. Your team obviously beat De La Salle to win another state championship. The girls basketball team reached the quarterfinals before losing to eventual champion Lehigh. The girls soccer team won the title over Lakeshore. The boys soccer team made the postseason. The baseball team lost in the semifinals to St. Charles, who ended up winning the whole thing. And the softball team lost in the semifinals to Archbishop Hannah, who won the whole thing. Start to finish, I know the Cougars and the fan base would have loved to bring home some more hardware, but that is a tremendous season from start to finish for STM athletics, Coach.
Yeah, we really did have a great season, you know, and you know, Raymond, it really all starts in the summertime. You know, like in 2 weeks now, we're going to start getting that weight room. You know, and I think that's kind of where you know we've I think it's really one of the reasons why we've helped us excel so much, that our kids do a lot of hard work and our coaches too. You know, do a lot of great work in that weight room, and you know, I think that prepares our athletes for the season ahead of them, and gets us a little, in basketball, man, my starting center, well, Caleb Hosting was 6'4", but he wasn't really a center. My center was Raider, at like 6'1". So, you know, we're so undersized, but I think we make up for that with our strength and our agility, you know, and our kids just put a lot of time and effort, and our coaches do, you know. So, I think that's one of the reasons why you see all these trophies in the years, because our athletes put a lot of time and effort into it.
Coach, you're an institution in itself, as long as you've been there at STM. How much pride do you take in seeing that the school has grown the way it has, and athletically, all the sports across the board, football, volleyball, soccer, everyone, baseball, softball, everyone is performing at a high level. All the programs are in the mix, competing for district championships and making deep postseason runs with state championship aspirations. Not every school has that, and it takes a long time for that to build. You know that better than anyone. How much pride do you take in all the Cougar sports having good seasons?
Yeah, it's no doubt. It really is. You know, and I think, Raymond, one of the things you could look at and point to is, if you look at the coaching staff, Jim Hightower has been at our school for 34 years, I think 33, 34 years, you know. There's a lot of consistency that goes about when you got to – and look at his staff. I mean, I don't know exactly numbers-wise, you know, but, man, Terry Kidwell's been there the whole time. He was there before Jim was there. He's been a defensive coordinator for all 37 years, you know. So you got some consistency there. You got guys, they just know what's going to be, a lot of experience. You look at baseball, Gary Perkins. Gary Perkins has been coaching for 40 years. You know, it's a lot of experience. I've been there 37. So, you know, our staff – and look – you know, we keep our assistant staff is, you know, I don't think you see us too much in that. I have lost assistant coaches, like, you know, to other programs, and you want that for your guys if they want. You know, like Eric Mouton was a great assistant coach. He became the head coach at Ascension. I lost Mike Bourgeois. He became the head coach at ESA. So, you know, I've had some great assistant coaches who have moved on, and Steven Strunning went from the boys to the girls. But if you look at Wesley Cortez, he's been with me for 9 years now, you know. So I think the consistency of our coaching staff has had a lot to do with the success as well, because, you know, we don't change coaches every year. You know, we build something, and I think, you know, the tradition has something to say about itself as well.
We're talking with longtime STM boys basketball coach, multiple state champion, Coach Danny Broussard, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Coach, I know we've talked about it before, but I'd love to give you the floor here. Talk about the season that you had, winning yet another state championship, and just the process. You know, did your team exceed your expectations this year, or did it live up to the high expectations that you have there at STM?
Yeah, Well, Remy, you know, we lost one of the all-time greats in Cougar history in Jonathan Cece. You know, I mean, the kid set, you know, some records at school. He scored over 1,000 points in his career. You know, he was all-district MVP, he was all-state. So, you know, when you lose a player with that kind of that caliber, you know, yeah, you got a lot of concerns. And I'm going to tell you something, it's not the only kid we lost, you know. We lost William Kramer, who had some big three-point shots for us all year long. In fact, he was our most consistent three-point shooter. And going into the season, that was kind of one of my concerns. And it played out in that we really struggled shooting the basketball this year. It really wasn't the strength of our team by any means. It was really our weaknesses was our shooting. So, you know, that kind of set us back a little bit. William Hebert was supposed to be a returning starter. He decided to concentrate on other areas at school. You know, as a matter of fact, he gave the welcoming address last night at our graduation ceremony. You know, just a great kid. Just decided that, you know, he had too much to do and he couldn't put all his efforts into basketball. So we lost, you know, those are three really, really good players, you know, two first-team all-district players. So I really did think, you know, I'm always optimistic. I feel like we could compete. But, you know, for me to tell you that I thought we could be in the state championship game was, I think, you know, that was a little far-fetched. You know, I thought about it, you know, I thought we maybe were a year away because, you know, the sophomores that really came through first, I wasn't sure they were quite ready to compete at the level and give us the minutes that they gave us. But that was, you know, a pleasant surprise. But so I thought we were a year away, and, you know, it's kind of one of those things where we're so, you know, we lost 11 basketball games this year. That's a lot, you know, but. Two things that attribute to that, I think. One of them, obviously, is the toughness of the schedule. I mean, you know, week one, we went to two New Orleans tournaments and played the best that New Orleans had to offer. You know, we went to Houston out of state and we lost it to a very good Episcopal team. So our schedule was very rugged for the team we had. And then, you know, I had 10 football players. I didn't get those guys till December the 9th. You know, so we had already played 12 games. So I think that contributed to a lot of our losses early on. But at the same time, what's good about this is that as you play in the season and you know, you have all these setbacks, plus we have some injuries. I had the most injuries I've had, I don't know how long this year. So when you put all that together, it allowed some guys who maybe wouldn't have got quite as many minutes, it allowed them to play more. And even though we were kind of losing some tough ball games, it prepared them. And so, man, once we got kind of into that second round of district where we started getting healthy again, you know, we won. As a matter of fact, our only blemish was to Turner's, which was a tough loss for us. You know, it's a rival. It's the other Catholic school across town. You know, and we were better than them. We were supposed to beat them. When we got upset at their place, I think, Raymond, that kind of solidified our team right there. It kind of brought us a little bit together. We fought through some issues. And then after that point, we didn't lose again, you know. And so it was kind of an up and down season. But, you know, but we really, like I said, that second round of district, we really put it together. And defensively is where we just got so, you know, that's what carried us throughout the whole playoffs was our defense. Our offense had its ups and downs. We had some games we shot it decent, but for the most part, we struggled scoring. But our defense is what kept us in games and allowed us, you know, our defense produced offense for us, basically what happened. And, you know, and again, we got on that roll in the playoffs. Had a great shooting game against UI and won that game, you know, pretty easily, 15. And then in the finals, you know, you can't describe that final game being down by 13 in the last quarter. It's just one of those things that, you know, to win a state championship, you got to have a little bit of luck. Things have to go your way. And in the fourth quarter, we got lucky. We got every break. Things went our way, except for that last block charge call, and the kid missed it for two free throws. But it just, everything just fell into place for that state championship game. And, you know, we came out as a state champ. So to say that I can predict that, no, there's just no way I thought we'd be that good.
We're talking with STM boys basketball coach and STM alumni director Danny Broussard here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Coach, I want to get your thoughts and your insight. I know everything that's occurred with the split when it comes to the playoffs with the select, non-select, it's now got a new wrinkle based on a proposal that was voted on and approved based on from Turling's Catholic principle, where now the select schools – will have the opportunity to select their own state championship sites. And I know there's a lot of moving parts to that and everything like that, but what are your thoughts on that? And, you know, you're a perennial state powerhouse team, so there could be a lot of extra responsibility put on y'all's shoulders when it comes to state semifinals and a state championship game. Your thoughts on all that, and do you think ultimately this will help bridge the gap and bring the two sides back together?
Well, that's a $10,000 question right there. I would hope it would, but I just it's hard for me to, you know, I thought, Raymond, we had a good proposal, where we said, you know, we kind of, I think the, the consensus is that this whole split started, you know, it goes back to the John Curtis evangelists when they were just winning state championship, and then when they moved John Curtis down and made forced him to play Double A, which, you know, that they should have never have done that, because then, you know, all these Double A schools, you know, just couldn't compete with them, and it created a lot of animosity, a lot of problems. And so I thought with our proposal for the, you know, was, hey, let's do this. How about the basketball guys vote and say, look, we understand what y'all are doing in football, but basketball, we're all kind of together. We want this together. And Raymond, to be honest with you, and every time we had these, you know, we have the convention, the coaches convention, and we have basketball meetings. And every time we met, you know, we'd kind of just say, hey, look, y'all, let's just be honest. How many of you would like to see this thing get together? You know, so the basketball coaches, when we were in that meeting, I mean, I'm not saying it's 100%, Raymond, but it was, you know, pretty much 80-20. You know, 80% said, hey, going back, 20% said, no, we like keep it like it is. So we felt like, man, let's put this proposal up and let's just do it in basketball. I think baseball did the same thing as well. But we put a proposal saying, okay, leave football on, but let's get basketball together. And I really thought I had a chance to pass. But then when it went to vote, it really wasn't that close. And, you know, it's one thing when the coaches come in that meeting and say something. But when they go back and the principals, you know, I don't know whether the principals don't agree them or they just say, you know, no, we really don't. You know, they said one thing and did another, basically. So, you know, the vote really wasn't that close. So I just can't see it. The public schools ever wanting to get back with us. They feel like it's an unfair playing field, and I get some of that. I really do. And again, you talked about all these. But, Raymond, you think about it. If you have a kid with an eighth grader, and, you know, I mean, every parent wants his kid to have the best, you know. I think I was that way as a parent. You want the best education. And so, you know, we're fortunate that we have a great educational system. Our ACT scores are off the roof, you know. And then, as you talked about, not really caring what sports you play, we're pretty successful in everything. So, you know, I think we do get some of those kids. But, you know, I'll be the first to tell you. I'll tell everybody this. They've accused me of recruiting for years. I say, just go find any kid that's played for me. Go find any kid. 23 years ago, and I want you to find one that said, yeah, Coach Bruce, I recruited me to go to FBM, they paid my tuition, all that stuff. I've never done any of that, you know, and none of our coaches, Jim, I follow that. We don't, you know, but we do attract good kids. I'm not going to lie about that. We've been lucky, you know. We attract good kids because I think they want to be part of something special, you know. So anyway, I guess I see the public school's point of view about that. But look, let's face it, too. We all know that. I mean, the public schools, they're not angels either now. You know, they want to prove them recruiting. There's kids that out there zone that go to them. Now they have all these academies, the arts academy. They want to be an engineer. You know, so, I mean, it is what it is. And it's never, even like it is now, it's still at a level playing field. It never will be. But to me, you know, I think if the enforcement, like I said, if they would have done their job way back and enforced it like it should have been done, and I had somebody go out there and really be aggressive and enforce the rules. When a kid, you know, transferred from 40 miles away and his dad got a job at some place and they would have found that out and punished those guys, then I don't think this would have ever got to this point. But I think because of the lack of institutional control by the LHSA, I think this is where it got us. And I just don't see it coming back. And that's just my personal opinion. That's my honest opinion.
We're talking with STM head boys basketball coach and alumni director and friend of the show, the legend himself, Danny Broussard. Coach, one last question before we let you get out of here on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. You got something that's very near and dear to your heart coming up here June the 3rd. It's the Slam and Jam Basketball Camp. Tell everyone about it and how they can get more information if they still want to take part in your basketball camp this summer.
Yeah, Raymond, that's something that, you know, it's kind of my little baby. I built it from the ground up, you know. In 1984, I had 35 campers, and I was so proud. I was like, man, this is awesome. You know, I had 35 kids, and, you know, now it's grown to over 500. And, you know, I'm just very fortunate. I got a great, great staff that's been with me for years and years. Tommy Peeled from Iraq comes in every year. He's been with me for all 36 years of the camp. He just does a tremendous job, and my assistant coaches are there. We just got a great staff together. Mike Bourgeois comes. He's been with me for over 25 years. J.P. Bouillon, all high school coaches who are all successful, and they just come back, you know, and we do our camp, and we start on June the 3rd. It's very easy, Raymond. If they want to, I have a little website they can go to. It gives all the information. You can actually sign up there. You can even pay online, even just pay the first day of camp. But it's really easy. It's just slamandjamcamp.com. slamandjamcamp.com. If you just go to that website, again, all the information on there. We have the first 2 weeks in June. If you got a kindergarten kid all the way up to fifth grade, we have a camp in the morning, and in the afternoon we bring in the older kids. We bring in the sixth and ninth graders in the afternoon. So, yeah, and Raymond, I think what's really good about our camp is we really stress the, you know, kind of what I, that's what we do. That's what I am. I'm about fundamentals. That's what I do with my high school team. So we do the same thing with these young kids. You know, I think what's successful about our camp is that, Raymond, if your kid has never experienced basketball, he says, I'm going to want to try this out. You know, a seven-year-old who's never picked up a basketball. We kind of take it from the ground up and teach them all the fundamentals, you know. So I think a kid comes to that camp and he doesn't feel like, oh, my God, I'm so far behind. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, we teach them everything they need to know, so to speak, and from the ground up. So I think that's the good thing about our camp. It's all about fundamentals. We, you know, and then we like to have fun, too. We play some competitive games as well. But we pretty much make it half and half. Half of the morning is the fundamentals. And we come back and we play some 3-on-3, 5-on-5. We have Beat the Buzz is a popular contest we do. Put 3 seconds on the clock, make a drive the length of the court, so there could be a Michael Jordan hit the game-winning shot. You know, so we do some fun things in the camp as well. But, you know, again, we've been doing it for a long time, and I've had a lot of success with it. So if anybody's looking for a camp, we'd be glad to have them. They can also email me, Raymond, at danny.broussard@stmcougars.net. danny.broussard@stmcougars.net. So either one of those ways to reach me, we'll get your kids signed up.
Coach, appreciate you making time for us on this holiday. And enjoy the camp coming up. And more importantly, enjoy spoiling that new grandbaby of yours.
There you go. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to go rock him a little while, baby. Rock him to sleep. y'all have a good Memorial Day, and I'll tell Cody I said hi as well.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it. That's STM, longtime boys basketball coach and alumni director, the legend, Danny Broussard, joining us here on the special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company.
I heard you, Coach. Thanks. Hi. How are you doing?
Cody heard you. Getting the little Memorial Day love from Coach Broussard.
Congratulations on the addition to the family. That's awesome.
We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Tremendous conversation there with STM coach Danny Broussard. I do believe that man needs his own show on our station. Just saying that. Putting it out there. Reminder, Houston Astros weekend getaway sweepstakes powered by Lafayette Roofing and Aloft Houston downtown. Enter in the Clubhouse Rewards Club to win 4 tickets to the Saturday and Sunday games, game day parking, a tour of Minute Maid Ballpark, and a one-night hotel stay. This getaway is for the June 8th and 9th games for the Astros versus the Baltimore Orioles. The only thing you got to do, guys, enter in the Clubhouse Rewards Club at 1037thegame.com to get your chance to win a pair of tickets for a Houston Astros weekend getaway. Reminder, Astros are going to be on today on this Memorial Day, live right here on 1037 The Game. First pitch scheduled for 1:10. The Chicago Cubs. That's right. The Fighting Cody Schutz has come to town.
Go Cubs, go!
That's right.
I'm sorry, Stros fans. Sorry.
Cubs at Stros, 1:10. And then after that, the good brother, Ben Love, will be hosting Bumper to Bumper Sports, a special Memorial Day edition of that. He'll help break down where LSU falls in the NCAA regionals. Hour two in the books. We're going to keep it going. Interview with Ricky Van Asselberg is coming up to start hour three right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when you, you know, when you look up in the head and you see your mom, you see her night in and night out, it's really different. And I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
We like our beer fat as candy. We like our dogs with mustard and relish. We got a great pitcher, what's his name? Well, we can't even spell it. We don't worry about the pen as much. We just like to see the boys hit it deep. There's nothing like the view from the cheap seats.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. And welcome on our next guest. He's an Alexandria native who played in the Baltimore Orioles organization as a ball player. He switched over to managing and had instant success as he won back-to-back United Baseball League championships with the Alexandria Aces in 2006 to 2007. He then carried that over to the American Association Baseball League as he won back-to-back championships there with two different teams, the Shreveport Bossier Captains and then with the Grand Prairie Air Hawks. He even coached in the Atlantic League for the Bridgeport Blue Fish. He entered the Texas Collegiate League last year as he was the skipper of the Texas Marshals based out of Dallas. This year he enters as his first season with the Acadiana Cane Cutters right here in the Lafayette-Youngsville area. The Cane Cutters open up this season on Wednesday at the Victoria Generals and then will return home for their home opener at Fallbacher Field in Youngsville against the Brazo Bombers this Friday. It's our privilege to welcome onto the program the Acadiana Cane Cutter skipper, Ricky Van Asselberg. Coach, how are you doing this morning?
Man, I'm doing great. I tell you, it's refreshing to hear somebody call me skipper again, because that's the hardest thing to get used to in this college baseball stuff is word coach. I don't usually let my players call me that. I tell them I'm not a coach, I'm a skipper. I got coaches that coach. So, man, it's nice to hear from y'all. How's it going down there in Lafayette?
It's going well. It's going well, Coach. Appreciate you coming on. Let's talk a little bit about your background. I know you're originally from Alexandria. You played briefly with the Baltimore Orioles in their organization. How long was that experience with the Baltimore Orioles in their organization, and what are some of your fondest memories from that time?
You know, a brief stint, you know, I think a year and a half, you know, could never stay healthy. But the you know, the funnest part was all the guys that I played with that played, you know, made it to the big leagues. And, you know, Jerry Harris Jr. had a great career up there. My roommate, you know, was Jason Worth. He, you know, everybody knows, I think he played till he was like 36 or 37, maybe even longer than that. So, you know, still, you know, talking to them guys and hanging out, you know, and knowing a bunch of people that played in the big leagues. And then, you know, my first year managing in Alexandria, I was only 31. And I actually even had some guys that I played with that played for me and, you know, had guys that were older than me that played in the big leagues like Trey Beeman and stuff that, you know, that I played against when I was with the Orioles. And, you know, so, you know, being able to coach them guys and manage them and play with them and all that and looking back and just, you know, like every athlete says, it's the clubhouse is the stuff you remember. You know, I couldn't tell you how many home runs I hit. I couldn't tell you what I hit what year. You know, I can tell you, you know, about what we did in the clubhouse and hanging out and stuff like that. So that's probably the main thing that I remember the most is just hanging out with the guys in the clubhouse and, you know, stuff like that.
We're talking with Acadiana Cane Cutter skipper Ricky Van Asselberg here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Talk to me a little bit, Skipper, about, you know, you got into being a manager of a ball club early. You were only 31 when you took over the Aces. You had instant success, back-to-back United League titles, and then you even played for the finals, I want to say, that third year, and you moved on to other associations. Were you surprised by the amount of success that you had at such an early age, and did that have a negative impact on you where it kind of raised the bar for everything else that you were going to be doing moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I always was, you know, confident. I always thought that I'd be a good manager, you know, when you know, I was a catcher all my whole career playing, you know, even for college and pro ball. So, you know, knowing how to run a pitching staff is a big part of being a catcher, and it's a big part of being a manager. So was I surprised to win 4 championships in 5 seasons? Yeah, I was very surprised. And, you know, very, when you do that, you're right, you set the bar high. So everywhere you go, you know, they expect you to win. And, you know, I try to tell everybody it's not that easy. You know, it takes a lot of luck and a lot of, you know, players got to stay healthy and you got to get hot at the right time. And I think, you know, most of my success and I think my best quality as a manager is just, you know, controlling the players and keeping everybody happy and knowing when to make changes and, you know, basically knowing how to run the bullpen. I always say is the biggest part of the championship, you know, knowing when to make changes and when not. I think good managers in a 140-game season will win 10 ball games, but bad managers will lose you 50.
I like that. Bad managers will lose you 50. We're talking with Ricky Van Asselberg. He's the manager for the Acadiana Cade Cutters right here in Acadiana. They open up their season this Wednesday at the Victoria Generals for a 2-game set before returning home for the home opener on Friday night versus the Brazos Bombers there at Fallbacher Field. Ricky, your career's taken you kind of all over the place. You even were able to manage in the Atlantic lead for 1 year with the Bridgeport Bluefish. What was that experience like being over there on the East Coast and coaching and managing in that league?
Well, you know, being in Bridgeport, it was just like the same thing when I was in the American Association. It was a new challenge for me and being able to go up there because every league's different. You go, you know, like the Frontier League, the Rookie Ball League, and then the United League, like the A-Ball League, the American Association, like the Double-A League, and then the Atlantic League, like the Triple-A League, you know. So on my 25-man roster, I probably had 15 guys that played in the big leagues, and everybody else had Triple-A experience. So, you know, actually those guys were the easiest guys I had to manage. You know, they know what it takes to play in the big leagues. They know what it takes to get there, so you don't have to tell them to get out there and get their work in. They're getting their work in. Basically, what you got to do is just manage personalities, you know, and do the right thing. I think that year we had 21 guys re-signed to an organization. And so when I got the job, the GM up there was Jamie Toole. And when he called me, you know, he was asking me all these questions. And I finally just said, look, Jamie, I'm not going to have the resume all them big league names got, you know. I said, I'm just a small-town guy. I've been an independent ball manager. I've won everywhere I went. You want to win? I'm your guy. And so he believed me and signed me. And we went up there, and, you know, we was in first place in the first half, 30 games in, 20 games in. We lost 5 players in 2 days to organizations. So we had to regroup. And then in the second half, we was in first place again, 20 games in. We lost, I think, 8 players in a week. Well, when you lose that many players, you know, you just can't find them. But, you know, that's why I think I've had a lot of success, because everywhere I've been, I've had a lot of guys, you know, sign to organizations. So when you do that, guys want to come play for you. And so I've been real lucky, real fortunate. But, you know, the Atlantic League was great. And, you know, of course, Bridgeport ended up closing down, and they brought New Britain back in, which used to be the Double-A franchise for the Twins. So once that happened, I decided I got a pitching coach job up in Traverse City. And I went up there, and I was there for a week, and I had to resign. I had some back issues, and I had a back surgery, and then I had another back surgery, and that's kind of what got me in the Texas Collegiate League, you know, with having back surgery. And it's just a new experience, man, and I love it. It's fun. These kids have got, you know, they want to get going, and a little different, but, you know, got to figure it out.
We're on with Ricky Van Asselberg. He's the skipper of the Acadiana Cade Cutters, who open up their season on Wednesday on the road and come back home for the home opener this Friday at Fallbacher Field against the Brazos Bombers. Ricky, you know, you talked a little bit about you had your back surgeries and that kind of put your career on hold. You got back into it last year where you served as the skipper there for the Texas Marshals in the Texas Collegiate League. They're based out of Dallas. That team is now relocated to Baton Rouge. So walk me through, how did we get involved here with Acadiana? You know, you're from the state of Louisiana, so obviously either being the skipper here in Acadiana or down in Baton Rouge would have been ideal for you with all your family and everything like that. So tell us, how did you get hooked up becoming the skipper here for the Cade Cutters?
Well, I would assume, to be honest with you, every time we'd go down to Lafayette and play when I was here with the Marshals, you know, the fans, they had a little group of fans that would always sit there, and they remembered me from Alexandria, and they'd have signs up, and they'd always welcome me when I'd get off the bus, and we'd sit out there and shoot the bull, you know, before the game. And every day when I was there, I'd talk to Mr. Richard, you know, the owner of the Cane Cutters, and we'd sit there and just talk baseball, and we'd become friends and got to have a pretty good relationship. And I love South Louisiana, man. That's my home. That's where I'm from. And so when the season was over, you know, we talked on the phone a bunch, and he called me, and he said, Ricky, he said, what's the chance of you going back into pro ball? And I said, well, I'm just found out, Mr. Richard, I got to have another back surgery in December, so that's kind of going to fold me for another year or two. And he said, well, would you be interested in coming to Lafayette? And he said, why don't you come down and bring your wife, and we'll go out to dinner and talk about it. Well, we went down and went into this little restaurant, and I can't remember the name of it, but as soon as we walked in, there was a sign that says, wear shoes on dance floor. So I had to explain to my wife, you know, down in South Louisiana, the way when we start dancing and having fun, we kick our shoes off and let it roll. And she started laughing, and it just kind of set the tone. And then, you know, we had met with Mr. Richard, had a good dinner, and I, you know, I didn't even ask what the pay was. I just said, hey, I'm in. I'm excited. And that's kind of how it happened.
Ricky, with the Texas Collegiate League being what it is, they're using actual kids that are still in college. You know, in your team, your roster is going to have guys from UL and LSUE and LSUA and across the board, Northwestern State. But a lot of these guys have, you know, sometimes the pitchers have pitch counts. And a lot of these guys are still playing postseason ball, so they're still not with the team. You'll get them late. Some guys will come in, they'll come out. So with a year already under your belt over there in Dallas, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges you as the skipper has of, you know, kind of getting this team to gel together with so many moving parts?
Well, the first thing I tell these kids what I've seen, when you get them there, you have to let them know that somebody's paying money for them to be there. Somebody's paying money to come watch them play. So it's a privilege to be there playing, and we're there to win. You know, a lot of these kids go play summer ball, and a lot of these coaches, you know, they I've heard them say many times, it's not about winning, it's about having fun, letting the kids get better. And to me, it's always about winning. Everything's about winning. And people, and this is probably going to offend some people, but people that say it's not about winning is most time people that's never won. And so that's what I try to instill in them. I try to let them know, hey, every night we go out there, we're going out there to win. And I understand these guys, these certain guys are on pitch count, so you got to realize how many pitches they can throw, and then you got to, all right, well, we're going to throw this many here, this many there. Then you get new kids come in, and, you know, you might have a kid from, you know, Notre Dame, and then you got a kid from LSUE, and you just got to, you know, kind of let them know that, hey, this is where this kid is, this is where you are, that we're all here together. You know, it's kind of like having some guys from Venezuela, some guys from Dominican, some guys from Texas, some guys from California, all on one team. It's the same thing. You know, you got different personalities, and I think that's the biggest job as a skipper is to get all those personalities to be one personality and go out there with a common goal and get the job done.
We're on with Ricky Van Alsenberg. He is the skipper of the Acadiana Cane Cutters. He's joining us today via the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ricky, we'll get you out with this, brother. How excited are you for the season to be starting in a matter of days? Right now it's Memorial Day, but you start off the season in Victoria for a two-game set on Wednesday, Thursday, before coming back home for the home opener against the Brazos Bombers on Friday night there at Fallbacher Field. Just tell us, how excited are you for the season to finally be here? It's only days away.
Well, right, I say, man, I'm super excited. I hope we pack the house opening night. It'd be nice to have 2,000 or 3,000 people in the stands and have some people tailgating and to come home to the way, you know, South Louisiana baseball is supposed to be. And I'm just looking forward to coming down there and putting on a good show for the fans and putting a team on the field that's going to play hard day, night in, night out, and just give everything they got to give, you know, the Cane Cutters fans and Lafayette and Mr. Richard and them a product to be proud of and something, you know, when they go to the store, they'll have their Cane Cutter stuff on and they'll be like, hey, that's our team. Because in reality, that's Lafayette's team, Youngsville area's team. That's their team. And I'm just excited to be a part of it, man, because there's nothing but good people down there, that's for sure.
Well, Ricky, appreciate you making some time for us here on this holiday, brother. Best of luck and to you and the Cane Cutters this season, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
All right, my man. Y'all take care.
That's Ricky Van Alsenberg, Acadiana Cane Cunners skipper. They open up the season this week. I want to thank Coach, skipper, manager extraordinaire for joining us here on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company.
Yeah, you fudged that one. He literally was like, oh, man.
He applauded me.
My players don't call me coach. I don't let them call me coach. I'm not a coach. Well, all right, coach, why do you say we start right here with this question? Good job, Ray. Well done, friend.
But Ricky remembers me for our days in Alexandria, so he's going to cut me.
He'll drop the elbow on you next time he sees you.
Yeah, a little bit. He'll give me a little help, but that's all right. It's all right.
And there's also, I like the line, too. But yeah, honey, down in South Louisiana, we get to dance and have a fun time. We kick our shoes off, babe. I love it. I've never danced so hard that I wanted to take my shoes off, so now I feel like I'm not doing it right.
Now you feel like you got to get with Ricky Van Alsenberg and have him show you how it gets done.
Right?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Boot, scoot, and boogie.
Oh, we're gonna hit a break here on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company, but we'll be right back right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, it's Memorial Day, or if for another reason you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches, what happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service and to promote public safety. Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
It is Memorial Day. I would like very much to get back to my pool. You just to rub that in. How you thought you'd just slide that in there? I wouldn't notice or nothing. Nah, that's what you thought. No. Yes, Raymond, I do want to get to my pool today. I will get to my pool today. I'll be damned if I don't. But I did not have to call 811 beforehand. My pool is above the ground.
Oh.
So, let the record show.
I was worried.
Let the record show if my pool were. Have gone underground, I would have absolutely called 811 at least 2 business days before I planned on starting. Because I want to know what's below before I dig.
Oh, bravo, sir. Bravo.
Can you dig it, sucker? Now I want to play the Booker T theme.
Of course you do. So I want to get your thoughts on something.
That's not Booker T related?
It's not Booker
Raymond,
T.
Raymond, but you already know that what... Come on.
Cody shoots, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with...
Rika?
Not sports talk.
You want to talk sports? What's wrong with you? Go ahead. We'll try. We'll give it a shot. Crazy idea, Raymond.
So, we got our friend from Saturday Down South, Connor O'Gare, is coming up in the next segment.
Top of the morning to you.
He's going to join us, talk a lot of college football.
It's a very Irish name.
It is a very Irish name. So, one of the things that I'm going to bring up to him when we talk to him here is the LSU-UT game. And there's
not that UT, but the other UT.
Not Tennessee.
Yeah,
not,
exactly.
Not the dreamsicle, pants-wearing, checkerboard in the end zone people.
Miss Derek Dooley, Tennessee Volunteer.
They should have never fired Fatboy Fulmer is what they should have done, but that set a domino effect of terribleness for
He's
them.
He's back, though, so it's going to be okay. He's going to fix it all. Don't worry.
LSU at Texas in Austin, second week of the season. That game is already building up so much hype, and it's only May.
Biggest game of all time.
They say it's going to be one of the biggest games of the year. There's more buzz about that game than, say, LSU-Alabama for the first time in a long time because a lot of it has to do with the way both teams ended, right? Both teams had 10 wins. Both teams, LSU won its New Year's Day 6 bowl game, the Fiesta Bowl, over UCF. Texas, meanwhile, won 10 games for the first time in a long time. And they whooped the dog out of Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. I was in the Superdome for that game, and I was like, damn.
Right.
Okay, that was a manslaughter. Second week of the season. Cody, you're a diehard LSU fan. With the buzz surrounding this game, it's going to be a top 10 matchup more than likely. People are saying it's going to have implications for the college football playoff.
Yep.
Is this a game that you'd be willing, as a diehard LSU fan, to make the road trip to go to Austin, Texas for that weekend and see LSU take on Texas?
That's an easy yes for me, because, and more specifically, because I went to the LSU TCU game that was at Jerry's World, however many years ago, I forget when that was, but the TCU-LSU game was there at Jerry's World, and it was an incredible atmosphere. It was a different kind of tailgate, and it was absolutely perfect. So I think Austin, as great of a city as it is, could probably do better, maybe. You know, the stadium setting might not be as good as Jerry's World, but I think the overall experience can be just as great. And this game, the LSU-UT game, has more to do with the overall season than that LSU-TCU game did, even though that LSU-TCU game had a lot to do for me personally.
I like that. I'd be willing to go. I am going to go.
Awesome.
Real quick, hey, hot summer sun is in high gear and it's time to cool off. And what better way to do that than a trip to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge? 103.7 The Game wants to send you there with a free family four-pack of tickets. Just text H2O to 68683. That's H2O to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game for our special Memorial Day edition of the show. It's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He's a senior national columnist for both Saturday Down South as well as SaturdayTradition.com. He's a friend of the show, Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. Happy holiday to you.
Well, I appreciate you making some time for us. I know it's a jam-packed holiday weekend, and we're a little bit of a lull here for college football, but not from you, my man. You've been cranking out stories left and right for Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition, so I wanted to kind of touch base on all those things with you. Let's start off with the hype is already building for the LSU-Texas game. That'll be week two of the season. It's going to be there in Austin, likely a top 10 battle between these teams. You say there's huge playoff implications from this game. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's has potential to be the first of a certain kind of matchup that the SEC has played in the playoff era, and that is a matchup of top 10 teams in non-conference play in a true college football atmosphere. So that means no neutral site games, just a good old-fashioned home-and-home. And I think LSU and Texas both have potential to be in the top 10 in week two, considering both start the season with cupcakes and both will likely have a lot of buildup, you know, leading up to this season. And I think that just kind of speaks to what this matchup can potentially be. I mean, we look back at that Notre Dame-Georgia game in 2017 and how instrumental that was in the playoff picture in the first two and a half months of the season there. And I think that this could potentially have that kind of impact. Obviously, Texas has some high expectations. I don't know if you saw, but Sporting News putting Texas in the national championship game against Clemson. There are some big things ahead for Tom Herman's program. I believe that. And I think that, you know, if you're an LSU fan, what a win like this could do just to sort of back off some of the can't coach O, be the guy type thing. I am, you know, pro Coach O in so many ways. I think he's done more than enough. But a game like this on a national stage where he would have to go into Austin and win a big-time game like this would really say a lot about him and his ability to get his team ready. And I think that the hype for that one is going to be tremendous. I think that there are people that are already excited to see the festivities in Austin.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, I got to see Texas up close and personal in the All-State Sugar Bowl where they absolutely dismantled Georgia, and it was a whooping from start to finish. I know that's part of the buzz about this team, how they ended the season and the beating they put down on Georgia. You say that you're high on them as well. Why is that? Are they just a complete team? Are they an ascending team? What do you see out of this last season that suggests that this is a team that could be in the mix for a college football playoff spot?
Well, really, it's Tom Herman is kind of weird in that, you know, for whatever reason, against SEC teams, he always gets up for it. He always draws up the perfect game plan. I mean, as a head coach against SEC teams, he's 3-0. If you want to go back to that Sugar Bowl game in 2014 where he's the offensive coordinator for Ohio State and they put up 42 points with a third-string quarterback against Alabama, like, you know, you could point to all these different instances where you just kind of wonder, like, what it means to him. And he had that weird, you know, celebration troll of Drew Locke in the Texas Bowl a couple years ago. And that team played on a different level for that game against Georgia. So you just kind of wonder, like, Tom Herman against SEC teams, maybe it does just kind of get him going. His juice is going in a different sort of way, and he just kind of taps into this different level. And, you know, I am high on this team because of the fact that they have somebody like him who obviously I believe is, you know, has the makings to be one of the best coaches in the country. And, you know, a lot of people in Big 12 country think that he can do kind of what Kirby Smart has been able to do to revive Georgia. And, you know, we saw those two coaches obviously clash last year. But, you know, the believability that he can sustain it, a lot of this is dependent on what Sam Ehlinger can do as a returning starting quarterback. I mean, it's been like a decade since Texas has probably felt good about a returning starting quarterback, and it's kind of followed a similar path to Florida and LSU in certain ways, and that just seems like, for whatever reason, yeah, they've had varying degrees of success, but with a returning starting quarterback and a coach that you believe in, it just changes the entire offseason narrative of a program, and I think that Texas is benefiting from that right now, despite the fact that they're, like, actually in the bottom quarter, I believe, of FBS teams in terms of percentage of returning production from last year. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of remains to be seen, but it feels like with Sam Ehlinger, they have a different kind of mojo, and we saw that last year in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Connor, I want to stay in the SEC. Mississippi State did something that kind of caught some people off guard, where they gave head coach Joe Moorhead an extension after only one season. Tell me a little bit about the thought process behind that decision.
Well, part of it is just the state law in Mississippi that you can only have contracts. Contracts can't be longer than 4 years. So this is kind of just a standard thing in terms of keeping up with the Joneses, in terms of making sure that, you know, you're not recruiting kids who are like, hey, you know, you're not even under contract by the time I'd be a senior there. And that I think is part of the motivation that goes into something like this. He got a raise, don't get me wrong, like, he got a raise to make $3.2 million, but this was the number 13 highest paid coach in the SEC last year. And now, not by coincidence, he's making more than Matt Luke. And what many people are saying is a make or break year for Matt Luke, this could potentially have some implications with that and trying to, you know, look like the more stable program in the recruiting world. I'm not saying that's the entire motivation, but I think that's part of it. And yes, while last year was deemed, you know, a little bit of a letdown, considering, you know, what I and many thought that Mississippi State could do, winning 8 games is still the most that any first-year coach has ever had at that program. We kind of forget, because of all the work that Dan Mullen's done in the last decade to build up that program in Starkville, just how, you know, how tough it's been, historically speaking, for new coaches there. So, yeah, I mean, 8 wins wasn't necessarily what they were shooting for. They had bigger goals, bigger aspirations last year, but this is still a guy that you believe in and did a lot of things right in his first year, and, you know, getting a convincing victory in the Egg Bowl certainly had a little bit something to do with that. But, yeah, I do think that there are some Ole Miss little wrinkles to this new deal and what it could potentially mean. But, I mean, it's not like he all of a sudden got, like, his contract doubled or something. If something like that happened, we'd be like, whoa, what in the world's going on here? But, you know, Mississippi State still has reason to believe that he is the long-term guy, and I think that it'll be interesting to see kind of how he develops in this year two, especially after making a move like going out and getting Tommy Stevens to add to that quarterback room. Joe Moorhead kind of knows what's at stake here and knows that he needs to make improvements on the offensive side of the ball to continue to show that he is the long-term guy there in Starkville.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, you had posted a story on SaturdayDownSouth.com that intrigued me, a kind of a look at SEC coordinators heading into the season that could quickly become head coaches for next year. Break that down for us, and who are some of those names?
Yeah, well, real quick before we look forward, I mean, I think people kind of forget that 4 SEC coordinators from last year became FBS head coaches: Michael Oxley, Chip Lindsey, Mel Tucker, Tyson Helton. All these guys have FBS jobs now. two of which are in the Power Five with Loxley and Mel Tucker going to Maryland and Colorado respectively. But I do think that this could be a year in which we see coordinators make that jump. And I think that, you know, given what we've seen in the offseason, Mike Elko getting a raise, you know, last week for, you know, the job that he was able to do in year one at College Station, he's the guy that jumps off the chart to me, that I've been very high on him and kind of seeing him rise through the coaching ranks. He was a candidate for that Cincinnati Bengals defensive coordinator job along with Todd Grantham at Florida. Ultimately, he elects to come back to College Station. And I think he's a guy that, you know, he's still young. I mean, people might forget that this is somebody who's still in his early 40s and could definitely make that move if that's what he wants to do, and could have a Power 5 job waiting for him, kind of like Mel Tucker did this past offseason. James Coley, speaking of Georgia, is another one that I think, you know, if Georgia makes this next step, and if Georgia has this national championship year, which isn't that crazy considering what they return, what they have with Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift, and their defensive talent that they return, if they make that next step, James Coley will have Power 5 opportunities available. I firmly believe that. And if he takes this offense to even higher places than what Jim Chaney was able to do, he is a guy that could potentially go out and get a head coaching job, considering the coaching tree that he comes from with Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Bowden and now with Kirby Smart. I just think that he's a guy that's kind of ready to take that next step. One that people are going to disagree with is Kevin Steele. And usually you don't put guys who are on the wrong side of 60 on a list like this.
He's also quite polarizing too, right?
Exactly. And I think that a lot of people would look at the situation that he was in, you know, in this, and obviously, you know, at Auburn, everybody loves him there now, considering what he has meant to that program. You forget how bad that defense was just a few years ago and how he's been able to take it over and do some good things there. But, you know, maybe some of this goes into the Mack Brown, Les Miles thing, where we have guys who are, you know, Mack Brown 67, Les Miles 65. You know, all of a sudden, like, you're looking at guys like that, and they have different resumes in their past than Kevin Steele, obviously. But if he wants to get over the Baylor stuff, and if he wants to just take another crack, you never know. In a year that Gus Malzahn could get fired, if Kevin Steele is all of a sudden looking for a job, or if he's not retained as defensive coordinator there, he just decides, you know what, this is time. This is my last time to do it. He is a guy that I could see potentially getting that next FBS head coaching opportunity. And then, you know, there are still guys like Dave Aranda and even Mike McIntyre, you know, has been a Power 5 coach throughout this entire decade. And, you know, 3 years ago, this guy's the AP Coach of the Year. And, you know, now he takes his coordinator position at Ole Miss. And if Ole Miss is able to kind of take that next step defensively and just be much better than they were in the last couple years, then he's somebody that's really interesting to keep in mind, that an FBS program, you know, you could definitely see him going to the MAC or going, you know, out to the Mountain West or something like that and getting another FBS opportunity, because he's still young enough to continue to climb that ladder and potentially get another job down the road.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on the special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Connor, speaking of polarizing coordinators from the SEC, Lane Kiffin obviously kind of rehabbed his career by being under Nick Saban there at Alabama. He's now entering year three at Florida Atlantic University, and a lot of folks, including myself, did not think he would be there entering a third season. I thought he would have jumped to another job already by now. Your thoughts on Lane Kiffin surprisingly enter year three there at FAU?
The interesting thing is, I wonder what conversation we'd be having right now if Lane Kiffin had won 9-10 games in year two. Instead, I felt like it was one of the more ignored storylines of the college football season, that, like, Lane Kiffin went from 10 wins to 5 in year two. And, you know, you had Devin Singletary, and you felt good about where your program was at. And to go to 5 wins is all of a sudden like, wait a minute. Is Lane really on this path that we think that he's on? And as we know, though, these things can change in a hurry. And I know that team had injuries and, you know, various issues. You know, they had a tough non-conference schedule as well. But, you know, at the same time, like, if Lane Kiffin all of a sudden wins 9-10 games this year, you know, that's we'll forget about that. And all of a sudden he's going to be somebody that we're talking about for Power 5 head coaching jobs. And, you know, I kind of think that the best version of Lane is in Boca, just doing this, you know, talk about it whatever he wants on Twitter, not having to worry about an administration coming down on him. I mean, this is somebody who, after 1 year at FAU, got a 10-year deal that's basically going to pay him $1 million a season. And I do think that there's the possibility that he says, you know what, to rebuild my image, I need to be here for like 4 years. And I need to just, you know, unless the perfect opportunity comes along, unless a program like Auburn comes along and is like, hey, we need you. We need you to kind of be the guy to steer the ship here. You know, then I do think that there's a possibility that Lane does end up staying even much longer than we expected him to at FAU. He's still trying to rebuild his image. And, oh, by the way, he's still in his early 40s. Like, this guy, you know, has been through so much in his career, and he's obviously not necessarily hurting for money, and that's not maybe going to make or break his decision. And I think that, you know, there's still obviously varying opinions on him. Even before last year, I remember Yahoo did a story about, you know, they pulled 15 athletic directors, and 11 of them said that they would not hire Lane Kiffin. And that was after last year, you know, where, you know, he was coming off the 10-win season there in year one at FAU, and all things were positive Lane. So you just never know, and there are a lot of places that he still, you know, given his history, would not be welcome through their doors to lead a program. So I just think that there are a lot of different ways that this thing can go, and I'll be interested to see kind of what year three makes of Kiffin, and if he decides, you know, if there are opportunities sitting for him, because we really haven't even seen him linked to many jobs. I mean, the Tennessee job he was linked to, of course, and, you know, the emails to the AD, you know, to Phil Fulmer about hiring somebody like Lane. But, you know, I'll be interested to see kind of where year three takes us with Lane and what this story, you know, evolves into in 2020.
Connor, I wanted to get your thoughts on a story that broke earlier this week. Colorado Buffaloes, who were formerly in the Big 12, they made the transition to the Pac-12 years ago, but their payout went up this year, but it's still less than it would have been if they would have remained in the Big 12. Are you surprised at all that the Pac-12 is struggling with revenue?
No, I'm really not, because, you know, they were so late to this TV rights explosion, and, you know, not having the ability to make money the same way that, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC have with their conference networks. I mean, the Pac-12 network has just not been what you know, they had hoped it was going to become. And I think that, you know, a lot of that is kind of goes back to Larry Scott, and somebody that has kind of been viewed it almost in this, like, Gary Bettman, you know, the NHL commissioner. Like, that's kind of the punching bag that he has become for the league. And he continues to get these raises, these lofty raises, when the conference continues to suffer. And it's not just about winning championships. It's, you know, realizing that you have a regional disadvantage with the TV market and not being able to be on these, you know, primetime games all the time, and having all these games that are, you know, Pac-12 after dark. It's all well and good, but it almost feels more like you're watching, you know, mid-major type stuff and not necessarily a big-time Power 5 conference. And, you know, it's a shame that places like Colorado aren't going to, you know, aren't benefiting from this. But, you know, at the same time, this is kind of the risk of expansion, of what we were looking at a few years ago when all these conferences are looking to get bigger and better. And, you know, this is a roll of the dice that a place like Colorado took. But, you know, at the same time, a winning can change a lot of these things. And if a program like USC is on the up and up, which we don't know if they are, if UCLA with, you know, with Chip Kelly is all of a sudden on the up and up, you know, these things can kind of turn it around. But, you know, I'm obviously very skeptical of what the Pac-12's future is when, you know, for really the better part of this decade, it's just been on such a downward spiral, it seems like, in other conferences, you know, like what Jim Delaney's been able to do with the Big Ten, and even what Gary Sankey's been able to do with the SEC. I think they've just passed them up in such a significant way that it's not just going to be a one-year thing or something like that. This is the course of time, and the Pac-12 has suffered.
We're on with Connor O'Gara, national columnist for Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on this special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. Connor, one last question before I let you go. Something else that was interesting that happened this week: Conference USA partners with the NFL Network for 10 league football games. I was surprised by this. Do you think this is going to open up the door further for NCAA football to be on the NFL's flagship channel? Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, about time that the NFL has kind of recognized that, you know, college football is a feeder system, is a free feeder system for them. Conference USA isn't exactly move the needle television, but, you know, at the same time, I think it's a good step in the positive direction. It's an interesting step, too, for Conference USA to say, you know what, like, we kind of get buried if we have this, you know, because everybody now has ESPN contracts, it seems like, and, you know, they get buried and, you know, they'll get bumped to ESPNU or whatever it is. And to kind of take a step out and do this, I think that we're going to see more Group of Five conferences start to go in this direction where you need that exposure. You need whatever exposure that you can get. And if the NFL Network is willing to do things like this, let's not forget, too, that they have the contract with the Alliance of American Football to broadcast those games as well. And I think that there is a market for it now. And if NFL Network is being shown in more homes across America, that it makes sense if colleges and if conferences, rather, want to take this next step to be able to say, look, just because it's, you know, the NFL Network or, you know, whatever it is, if there is a specialty network that's nationally broadcast, you know, we're just going to do whatever we can to get this paycheck, to get more exposure for our athletes here, because this is how you move the needle in the conference. And maybe, you know, maybe Conference USA players are going to get drafted more as a result. I don't know what the case is, but I like the boldness of this move, and it's a little bit creative, and I wouldn't be surprised if more conferences look into doing stuff like this.
Connor, I appreciate you taking time out of your holiday to spend it with us and breaking down all things college football. Appreciate the time as always, and enjoy the rest of your holiday, brother.
Yep, appreciate it. Sounds good, guys.
That's Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com joining us here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break, but more sports talk up next right here on 103.7 The Game. Closing things out here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Special Memorial Day edition is in the books, and it was tremendous. Want to thank all of our guests for taking time out of their day. Kerrick Jackson, Southern head baseball coach. The Dean Kane of Acadiana Sports Media. George Faust from KLFY. Brady Amon, our boy for old school wrestling. STM head boys basketball coach Danny Broussard. The new skipper of the Cade Cutters, Ricky Van Alselberg, and, of course, Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. Y'all have a great day out there. Cody?
Happy Memorial Day, Acadiana. Go out there, do your thing, but be smart, be safe. It's South Louisiana. We know how to have a good time, and we know how to do it safely. So enjoy. And sunscreen.
Sunscreen. That's right, sunscreen. Y'all be safe. Have a tremendous Memorial Day.
Can I go home now, Raymond?
Yes,
all right,
you can
good.
Go.
Thank goodness. I'm going to go home. I have a swimming pool. I'm ready to jump in my swimming pool, man. It's Memorial Day.
Get your swim on, brother. Get your swim on.
But always remember the real reason for the day, and shout out and love, nothing but love, to the men and women of the military here in America that have passed, and to their families. That's what the day's about. Never forget. Hashtag that.
Never forget. God bless y'all. Y'all have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.